you get what you paid for in that consumer bargain when you purchased that particular product.
Let's take one of our emails. This comes to us from Gary in San Francisco, who writes in, I see the central issue here being the recording industry's resistance to new distribution technology. The music-consuming public no longer values the recording industry's legacy of distribution systems, truckloads of plastic discs. Instead of heeding those market forces and adapting to a new digital distribution model, the recording industry is using its political influence to force consumers to continue to buy what he calls their buggy whips. Mitch Glazier.
Unfortunately, this argument becomes an excuse, ignoring all of the new services out there, to continue to engage in theft. I think anyone who looks at the diverse array of digital services that are out there and all the different consumer models, from Apple iTunes and buy.com with the download of a particular single for a certain price without any subscriber ship necessary, versus the subscriber models where you can have all you can eat on a monthly basis for a certain fee, some with burning, some without burning, some are streams, some are downloads. There is a huge marketplace out there that's experimental, looking to see what the consumer likes best. But if consumers continue to steal instead of engaging in the legitimate marketplace so that that marketplace can emerge and migrate to a healthy, robust one that serves consumers in the way that they want, everyone's going to lose.
Jason Schultz, let's bring you back into this. You hear the argument that there are new technological legal alternatives, iTunes and others, that allow you to get music off of the internet at a relatively modest price. So this isn't about buggy whips. There are, in fact, new technologies that are legal. And so there isn't an excuse anymore to engage in illegal activity.
See, and that's the thing is, actually, I think that's not exactly true. I think these services are quite inferior. People who've used them, when you talk to them, for one, the selection is very, very small compared to what you can get today on file sharing. I mean, 300,000 songs sounds like a lot, but when you compare it to the millions of songs that have, been recorded over the last 40 years, that, many of which you can get on these file sharing networks, consumers are really saying, here's a choice I have between a very small collection and a very large collection. The other thing is that most of these services, most of these services restrict your ability to use the songs far more than if you bought them on a CD. If you buy a CD of music, you can load those songs on your computer legally. You can load those songs onto an MP3 player legally without restrictions about when you play them, where you play them. And a number of these services actually severely restrict your ability to use the song that you paid 79 cents for, or use the song you paid 99 cents for, and consumers don't like that as well. So I think until those services start offering the flexibility consumers are used to from CDs and the availability that they can get on file sharing, you're not really going to see that much migration over there.
But it sounds to me a bit like you're making this argument. You're saying that the selection isn't as good, the services aren't as good, and so therefore consumers will continue to do something that's illegal. I mean, that's a bit like saying, I don't like the cereal that's available at my grocery store, so I'm going to go steal a box somewhere else. I mean, you know what I mean? Just because the choices aren't there doesn't necessarily justify doing something that's not legal.
Oh, you're exactly right. And I'm not trying to justify it, but I am trying to point out that the services being offered are not the solution to the problem. It's not like, oh, there's no reason to go file share because you have everything here for 79 cents or 99 cents.
Yeah.
But the other, the other aspect of that is the question is, if it's currently illegal, and as Mitch was saying, it's sort of like speeding. The fines and the penalties are way above what you get when you get a traffic ticket. A felony for one, but also the lawsuits brought against people here, and we've seen four examples with four college students already. Are the kind that can bankrupt a family. I mean, it's just the severeness of this deterrence approach, and bankrupting families who are trying to send their kids through college. I mean, it's way above the kind of fines that you would get from speeding. And so if you're going to take that kind of deterrent approach, I think you have to look at it realistically.
All right. Let's get a Let's get a brief response, Alec French, on that point, that the penalty is out of line with the crime, and then we need to move on and take some more calls. So brief response,
sure.
Please.
Well, the felony penalty would apply to someone who is willfully, in other words, knowingly infringing and intending to infringe, uploads a copyrighted work with the intent to distribute that work to millions of people, to an unlimited number of people, and beyond a reasonable doubt it can be proven that they are doing that, then in that case there really is a good case for that person being subject to a felony. They are knowingly distributing to millions of people a copyrighted work with intent to infringe that copyright. That what is the difference between that and someone driving a truck out to a street and starting to distribute counterfeit CDs by the thousands? There is no functional difference between the two.
All right, let's begin to work our way through our calls. Lots of people wanting to call in on this subject. So let's go next to Michael in Palo Alto.
Hi, I just want to make one point and ask a question. It seems like people have this idea that we're somehow hurting the artists, and in some cases I'm not sure that's so true. I think just a couple of talent equals success when it comes to music, and hard work also, and I just want to point out one of the most successful bands in history, the Grateful Dead, who actually would have encouraged this type of activity, and that's because they worked hard and they were talented artists. And there are artists on the web that are offering free downloads of their music because they have the confidence that, you know, they're talented, and that once people get a hold of this, they're going to come and maybe buy direct from them or go see them in live in concert in San Francisco. So I'm not so sure that the argument that we're actually hurting the artists. I mean, I don't know much. Maybe the songwriters at one level get hurt by it, but and I just also want to
hang on if you would,
like,
please.
A lot of artists have tried to circumvent record companies ever since the 60s, and I wonder why that is.
All right, let's see if we can get an answer on the first point, Mitch Glazer, that this really isn't hurting the artists so much as it is the recording companies.
Well, the caller raises a great point about artist choice and the choice of the copyright owner. If an artist decides, and it's the artist's decision, that they would like to distribute their material for free, if they are making money from touring and promotion, and they would like to allow their audience to make a copy of that particular live performance because that is included in what they want the consumer's bargain to be for that particular concert. If they want to put it out on a peer-to-peer system, those are all valid choices, but the choice belongs to the artist. The choice does not belong to someone who's making the decision for the copyright owner to say, well, because you don't know that I'm helping you, I'm going to take away your right, and you can't enforce your rights against me to take this from you. If a person who owns something decides to give it away, that's fine and valid, but a decision can't be made for them.
Is that the key point in this, Joseph Men, that the technology isn't the problem? It's not the technology that's incorrect or illegal here. It's how it's used, and that this technology could be used, as the caller and Mitch Glazer suggests, in a way that's beneficial to artists.
For recent history, in the case of Napster, the first thing that brought this all up, I spoke to a lot of bands, and there was a lot of posturing on both sides. I think the most extreme example is Chuck D of Public Enemy writing a New York Times op-ed supporting Napster as a new kind of radio, and it turns out some of the internal Napster documents show he was paid $100,000 for that endorsement. But a lot of bands were initially supportive of Napster, and generally speaking, the more obscure the band is, the happier they are about exposure. They can't get on the radio, and a lot of bands were very happy and have put up their own websites, but it is their choice. And even some of the bands that were initially supportive of Napster, including the Beastie Boys and The Offspring, eventually got pretty angry because it was clear that Napster was about making money, and, you know, they never even asked for permission. Offspring would have happily given permission to Napster to put their material online, and Napster never asked. So, I think a lot of this a lot of this has been turned around. Yes, the record industry probably gets hurt more than the individual bands, but the individual bands should have the right, and they really don't in the way it's working now.
All right, and next to Trey. Go ahead, Trey. You're on the air.
I kind of want to piggyback on that last point that I think, you know, fairly or not, it seems as if the market is sort of self-regulating, and I think a lot of consumers feel that, you know, the pricing of CDs for the last, you know, 5 or 10 or whatever years has been a little unfair, and people are trying to, you know, distribute their own costs of the CDs, you know, into other types of music. And, you know, a lot of people that I know are not buying CDs. They're still buying CDs, but are also, you know, maybe doing some file sharing and are trying to bring the price of their own CDs down on their own.
Out of line, and this, and part of what is so attractive about this other technology is that it allows you to get music, obviously, much less than what it takes to buy a CD at Tower Records.
You know, buying the CD at Tower Records or Barnes & Noble compared to buying it at a Best Buy or a Target, you'll find that the pricing is actually all over the map. The record company gets the same wholesale price no matter where it's sold, whether it's a loss leader at one store or it costs more because there's a coffee shop and someone who knows everything about music to help you find your selection at another. It's all about consumer choice. Consumers have the ability to buy CDs at cheaper prices depending on the environment and at more expensive prices depending on the service. And these are all good things depending on what the consumer wants. In addition, if they want it digitally, they can go to iTunes and for 99 cents buy it, and for that same price burn it onto a CD and transfer it to a portable device. It's all about providing lots of choices in different forums and formats to consumers. What's not tolerable is a culture of theft, where instead of having e-commerce, we take the commerce out of that equation and we only have e, which achieves nothing.
And next to Steve in Mountain View. Go ahead, please.
Well, I only had just three questions.
Why don't you just give us one, because we're a little short on time.
Well, these are really short. One is, it going to be illegal for libraries to loan music? And two, is it going to be illegal for me to donate music to libraries? And three, if that's not the case, then why is it illegal for me to loan music to my friends?
Okay. Thanks, Steve. At least you got your three questions in quickly. Alec French, your response?
It's, as Mitch pointed out earlier, perfectly legal for the caller to take their CD that they purchased, that copy, to loan it or give it to a library, or to loan it or give it to a friend, or for the library to then loan that particular copy out. But the key distinction is, when you buy that CD, you are not buying the right to make unlimited copies of the CD or to send through the internet copies of those to 1, 2, or 1 million of your best friends. You're buying that copy within very narrow parameters. You can make a fair use of that copy by making another copy of it, but you don't have the right to put your copy, you know, rip it, put it online, and make it available to anyone.
Let me read one last email because it brings up a clarification, and I do want to make sure our audience gets this. He says, I'd like to make sure that we correct a possible misconception. Use of any file sharing program, be it Napster or any successor program, is legal. You may share files at will. However, your actions become illegal if you share copyrighted material without authorization. So thanks to Eric to make sure that we get that correct. We're approaching the end of our hour, and I just want to return now to each of you with just some brief last thoughts on what you think is important for our listeners to go away thinking about as we continue to debate this topic. First to Joseph Mann.
Well, as I said before, I mean, I think the cat is out of the bag. I don't think peer-to-peer file swapping is going away anytime soon. In fact, seeing as a couple of flavors of the systems have been found to be legal, though the individual using them may be breaking the law, I think you're going to see a lot more evolution of different business models, different approaches. And I think politically what makes the most sense for everybody is some sort of compromise where artists get paid, but the technology is allowed to flourish.
Mitch Glazer.
Let's let the marketplace that has changed so rapidly over the past 3 years. Imagine what's happened over the past 3 years and what's going to happen over the next 3 years. Let's let it get to a place without trying to draw any rules or government regulations around it, so that consumers can demand and get the choices that they want. And hopefully through programs like this, people will know that this is illegal activity and will also understand that the integrity that's available on legal services gets you away from the pornography, the privacy and security breaches, and the integrity problems that also exist on these pirate services.
And Jason Schultz, as our proponent of what the Internet can be about, a brief last thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think the marketplace here has spoken. I think 60 million people want to have file sharing, and I think the thing here to do is to make that legal and to get artists paid. And at EFF.org, we have a program for a campaign called Let the Music Play to try and get Congress to take a look at options for making file share legal. And I think that's an important piece of the puzzle here. I think, you know, we have to talk about a way to solve this problem without hundreds of thousands of lawsuits, bankrupting families, and making, you know, teenagers into felons.
All right. And a brief last word, if you would, please, Alec French.
Brief, sure. You know, I would like to be able to get cereal in individual handfuls for each breakfast, but I understand as a consumer that the owner of that property has made a choice to package it to me in a certain way, and it's not my right to go in the grocery store, open it up, and grab a handful and demand that either they sell it to me at a lower rate or I can walk out the store with it.
All right. Alec French, who is the Minority Counsel of the House Judiciary Committee, thanks for joining us. Thanks, too, to Joseph Mann of the L.A. Times, Mitch Glazer of the Recording Industry Association of America, and Jason Schultz of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.